I'm demanding a reason why they ejected me from the campaign without anything. I didn't have any Palestinian kufiya. I didn't have any pens. I didn't have any signs. I was not planning to protest. I just was sitting there. This is my city where I ran. Everyone in this city, they know me because I ran there. I was canvassing door to door there. My ads were there. My signs were there. I actually spoke at the Democratic Club in Royal Oak, Michigan. So it's not like I'm a random person. They know me very well. And there is a reason why they ejected me. So I want to know what is the reason. And for me, when people talk about just one issue voter, it's not about Gaza. Gaza's far away from me. It's a very important issue for me. But now it's important. What's more important? Do I have place in this party or not? Is this the party of diversity of inclusion, or Muslims and Arabs don't have room anymore in this party?
Well, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Ahmed Ghanem, a Muslim community leader, former Democratic congressional candidate, speaking to us from Oak Park, Michigan, on Monday, given no explanation when he was kicked out of an invitation-only Harris campaign event in Royal Oak, Michigan, to which he was invited. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Currently accepting applications for our video news production and digital fellowships. To learn more, go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Aguzder, Messiah Rhodes. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh for another edition of Democracy Now!
KB, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is now on Venmo. Follow us and send a donation anytime at KBOO Radio. That's at KBOO Radio. Thanks.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News... Not good enough. That's the response from Boeing workers as they decide to stay on strike. Speaking out to save Oregon's canyonlands and protect us from the toxic effects of plastics.
Plastics are burned, they're buried, they're borne out to sea, and they're getting into everything.
And will voters in Washington state decide in favor of a tax for funding education? Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, October 24th, 2024. I'm Minette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. Factory workers at Boeing in Washington, Oregon, and California voted to reject the company's latest offer and to continue their six-week strike. The strike has already stopped plane production and cost the company hundreds of millions of dollars. Union workers say they want a 40% wage increase over 4 years and better pension benefits. Boeing's latest offer was a 35% wage increase over 4 years and included better 401k benefits, but did not address the pension issue. Larry Best is a customer quality coordinator at Boeing. He says, quote, "The pension should have been the top priority. We all said that was our top priority, along with wages," end of quote. Boeing did not comment. There are more than 1,200 union machinists in Oregon, most of whom work in Gresham. The Gresham plant specializes in machining hard metal like steel and titanium that gets used in commercial planes. Last week, Boeing CEO Kelly Ortberg said the company would cut about 17,000 jobs in the coming months because of production delays and the company's overall bad finances. Saving Oregon's precious canyonlands and fighting plastics pollution. Those are two of the top issues that Oregon U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley spoke about at a recent town hall meeting this week with members of the Oregon League of Conservation Voters.
The Owyhee Canyonlands has been a top priority for our state. When we think of our Oregon treasures, Owyhee is right up there at the top. And the key to date has been Senator Wyden's bill, which he has worked on for now for quite a few years, and you all have been very engaged in. It protects about 1.1 million acres. There's been a lot of engagement with the community in southeastern Oregon to try to create a win coalition to take us forward and get a bill that is passed. We have so many kind of endangered wildlife that is key to the canyonlands, and encroaching use is continuously creating more challenges. And that's why we push for protection. And one of the things you all have been urging is for the president to designate the Owyhee Canyon lands as a national monument. It is now hopeful that we have essentially these two tracks, and one can help improve the odds of the other. Congressman Bence is now engaged in a way that he hasn't been engaged before, with his team working to lay out their vision of their version of what protection looks like and negotiating that with Senator Wyden, the lead on the Senate side. So that sort of bipartisan traction can make it possible. Our wilderness bills get done when there's a group of bills all done together. My very first vote as a U.S. senator was on a package of about 100 wilderness bills. And that reason for that is because when anyone tries to put through a wilderness bill, someone else says, what about the wilderness bill in my state? And eventually, every state has things they want to accomplish, and there's a big package put together. So that is our hope. And meanwhile, you have the backstop of possible ability of a monument. The idea of a monument is not well received by some of the stakeholders, but just like when on the Cascade Siskiyou, I proceeded to call up Secretary Jewell, and we'd had a lot of engagement, said this is our one opportunity is now, and that ended up being the tool with which we doubled the size of Cascade Siskiyou and provided critical protections. So between the two efforts, hopefully they'll work together, and we'll get this accomplished. A second thing I wanted to talk about is biodiversity. Our ecosystems, we often concentrate on kind of one particularly charismatic animal or fish or so on and so forth, but our whole ecosystems are under assault from development, from deforestation, from pesticides, herbicides, from pollution, from invasive species. The experts estimate that we've, as humankind, have had a serious impact on about 3/4 of our land environments and 2/3 of our marine environments. And so this number is rather shocking, but about 1 million species worldwide are threatened with extinction. And 70% of mammals, birds, fish, amphibians, reptiles are in decline. And one of the accelerating factors is climate chaos. So we're in this world that's unsustainable. It certainly is unacceptable in terms of our responsibility to maintain the integrity of the planet we live on and pass that intact, healthy planet on to the next generation. And it's just devastating to think about how in a single human lifetime, my now 67 years, so much has happened. I found it interesting to go out to, there is a monument out at the confluence of the Sandy River and the Columbia River. And there were a series of monuments done designed by the woman who designed the Vietnam War Memorial to commemorate Lewis and Clark's journey. And she took different things from their journals. And one of the things she did is built a duck blind out at that confluence. So it's a whole series of slats that you can see through. And on the inside of the slats is carved into it all the species that were noted in Lewis and Clark's journal. And then an addendum saying whether they were endangered or extinct. And as you stand inside that roughly 10-foot diameter monument, and you see how many species since Lewis and Clark are extinct and how many are endangered, it's just making the point that I'm making here. So I've introduced a resolution to call for a national biodiversity strategy. So we are coordinating all the pieces of our effort, recognizing that just focusing on one species or another is not the complete picture. I want to talk about plastics. Plastics are such a big environmental problem, and they have received so little attention proportional to the damage that they are doing. That damage, the more you pay attention, the bigger the damage gets. But the fossil fuel industry makes plastics from fossil gas, so they have no interest in publicizing this environmental challenge. You have this situation where people live near a petrochemical plant, and that puts off fumes that increase the cancer rates. That's been understood for a long time. But in general, the public relations strategy of the fossil fuel world is to re-accentuate the three R's that we've all heard about: reduce, reuse, recycle. It'll all be okay, don't worry. But with plastics, the reality is the three B's. Plastics are burned, they're buried, they're borne out to sea, and they're getting into everything everywhere. I used to think about plastics as the lumps that were devoured by animals, and particularly sea life. It looks like little pieces of jellyfish, and then their stomachs would be full, and then they'd starve to death, and they'd die. They'd wash from the beach, and we'd cut their stomachs open, and we'd see this horrific pack of plastic. Over this last year, I held 6 hearings on plastics. Nobody has held hearings on plastics before, and so that's breaking new ground. But one of the things at one of the hearings, this scientist brings in this what looked like a humongous egg. I'd say it was about 2 feet long, maybe 15 inches high, and sets it on the testimony table. And everybody's looking at it going, what is that? Well, what it was, the contents of the stomach of a camel. So he had pulled this egg-sized compaction of plastic bags, and the camels eat up the plastic bags. Plastic is not a natural thing in their environment. They see this plastic and it has some smell or whatever. They think it's food. So it's not just sea life. It's a point I'm making here. Those chemicals, those plastics are also leaching chemicals. They're leaching into our water, into our soil. And as we get into the micro and nanoplastics, it's no longer just a question of these lumps that are filling up stomachs. It's now the chemicals that are getting into our bodies.
And that was Oregon U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley. Oregon Congressman Earl Blumenauer will resign in January, and voters in the 3rd District will decide on his replacement. Blumenauer has been in Congress since 1996, first winning a special election to replace Ron Wyden when voters elected him to the Senate. In the years since, Blumenauer has supported moving away from fossil fuels, reforming the healthcare system, and legalizing marijuana. He's an advocate for mass transit and commuted to the Capitol by bike. The 76-year-old congressman also founded the Congressional Bike Caucus. In 2019, he was one of the first lawmakers to support the Green New Deal. He was the 9th Democrat to publicly call for Biden to drop out of the presidential race this year. With Blumenauer exiting Oregon's congressional delegation, Representative Suzanne Bonamici is expected to help bring the delegation together on important statewide issues. Blumenauer was one of the longest-serving members of Congress, and that seniority, he said, made it hard for him to want to retire from the lawmaking body. Previously, Blumenauer served on the Portland City Council. This week, Mayor Ted Wheeler led a tribute to Blumenauer.
Congressman Blumenauer's vision for transforming 82nd Avenue from an orphan highway to a vibrant and safe connector of community has served as a guiding North Star that is now yielding public investments that are transforming the entire corridor. And whereas Congressman Blumenauer has been a leading proponent of equitable infrastructure development and an instrumental partner in the effort to restore and revitalize Lower Albina through his leadership to secure funding for the Reconnecting Albina Planning Project, the Broadway Main Street Project, and the I-5 Rose Quarter Improvement Project. And whereas Congressman Blumenauer has long been a champion of environmental protection, including leading efforts to declare a national climate emergency, pass the Green New Deal, and promote conservation and recreation around Mount Hood and the Columbia River Gorge. And whereas Congressman Blumenauer has been a national leader for decades in the effort to reform our cannabis laws to be more equitable, creating economic opportunity and access to alternative health care rather than criminal punishment. And whereas Earl Blumenauer is now retiring from Congress after faithfully serving the constituents of Oregon's 3rd Congressional District with distinction for 28 years. And whereas, in his next chapter with Portland State University, Congressman Blumenauer will continue working tirelessly to make Portland America's most livable city. I, Ted Wheeler, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, do hereby acknowledge and celebrate Congressman Earl Blumenauer's unparalleled career of service to our community and express the internal gratitude of the people of Portland. Thank you, Earl.
Thank you very much. Usually you have to be dead before you have moments like this. And fortunately, I'm still with you and looking forward to working with all of you on what is next for our community. It was my great honor to serve on this council. It was one of the most formative periods for me. It was very rewarding in terms of the relationship with the citizens of Portland. You know better than anybody the challenges and the joys of that connection. I have made clear that you've gone through the most difficult period of any members of the Portland City Council. I spent 10 years, we had our ups and downs and challenges, but nothing I face was similar for you, Mayor Wheeler, Dan. But you've all been in the midst of this, and I deeply appreciate your perseverance. We wouldn't be where we are today without your following through. There are all sorts of people that I hope in my next life that I'll be able to try and focus on who got us here. My colleagues on the City Council, Bud Clark, the most unsung hero in Portland's history, an amazing human being. Mayor Katz, Gretchen Kifori, the honor roll of people who preceded us is impressive. We've still got Mike Lindbergh kicking around. There were citizens who made the difference, the Bill Nadeaus, Greg Baldwin, Tom Walsh, people who were truly giants and who were partners with us. And I'm honored to have had a chance to do some work with them. I am proud to have been part of an effort that reallocated responsibilities between the city and the county and stabilized finance for a decade in an era of cooperation, which is always important. We managed the largest unsewered urbanized area in the United States that forced people of East Portland and Multnomah County to pay twice because of the failures of some county commissioners in the 50s and 60s. Those were challenging times, but they were exciting. And the city employees, the managers, the citizen volunteers were there with money, chalk, and marbles, and we're all the better for it. So I thank you for the recognition. I thank you for the partnership, and I thank you for the opportunity for us to think about how we, in a interesting new era, how we build on those past experiences to help Portland move forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that was Oregon Congressman Earl Blumenauer, who is not seeking re-election after serving in Congress for 28 years. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News In-Depth. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather, partly cloudy, down to 43. Tomorrow's weather, intervals of clouds and sunshine, a high of 63, cloudy with showers tomorrow night. Today in history, on this date in 1901, a 63-year-old school teacher named Annie Edson Taylor became the first person to successfully take the plunge over Niagara Falls in a barrel. Our quote of the day is from Annie Edson Taylor, who said, "I felt as though I were being suffocated, but I determined to be brave." Washington voters will decide on a future source of funding for childcare and education in this year's election from a $500 million capital gains tax. Eric Tegedoff tells us more.
If passed, Initiative 2109 would repeal a 7% tax on capital gains for assets worth more than $250,000. Supporters of the repeal say capital gains taxes are volatile and that it could lead to an income tax down the road. But Wesley Tharp notes 42 states have capital gains or income taxes, and that capital gains taxes are one of the most effective tools to balance our tax codes.
Things like personal income taxes, corporate income taxes, capital gains taxes, those are going to collect a bit more from those at the top, and that helps balance out the fact that lower and middle income people are contributing a much larger share in things like sales taxes and fees and to some degree property taxes as well.
Last year, Washington State's capital gains tax pulled in about $786 million. The first $500 million collected from it goes towards schools, early learning, and child care. Money collected beyond that is used for school construction. Washington has historically had one of the most regressive tax systems in the country. Suzette Espinoza-Cruz is with City of Seattle's Department of Education and Early Learning and is a Washington State lead volunteer for the Save the Children Action Network. She says early childhood learning has benefited her niece's child, who was ready on his first day of kindergarten because of the state's Early Childhood Education and Assistance Program. Her niece's other child needed help in school, and Espinoza-Cruz says she was able to get that help.
What worries me about ballot initiative 2109 is that programs that are supplementing students' learning could be cut if we had less funding available for our pre-K through 12 system.
Tharp says there would be long-term impacts from repealing the capital gains tax from investing less in quality education, early learning, and child care.
You're going to wind up down the road with a less competitive workforce, communities that are not as attractive of places to live and work. And so there really is some significant economic risk to taking away that source of revenue for those public priorities.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
There are two measures on the ballots in California on criminal justice reform. Suzanne Potter reports one would ban involuntary prison labor, and the other would increase penalties for some drug and property crimes.
Groups that fight for criminal justice reform are urging California voters to support Proposition 6 and reject Proposition 36. Prop 36 would increase jail time for certain property and drug crimes, reversing parts of Prop 47. George Galvez is with the Oakland nonprofit Courage, which stands for Communities United for Restorative Youth Justice. He says the most commonly shoplifted items include baby formula and diapers.
These are crimes of survival. These things would be elevated to become felony crimes. When we're spending $137,000 a year to incarcerate people, it really does not make sense as opposed to just investing in programs that actually are effective.
Supporters of Prop 36 argue that current penalties, which were set by Prop 47, are too lenient. Prop 47 diverts the savings from lower prison costs to social programs that help formerly incarcerated people get back on their feet and address the root causes of crime, like poverty and addiction. Prop 6 would amend the California Constitution to ban involuntary servitude as punishment for a crime, which would put a stop to forced labor in prison. Galvez says there's a connection between Props 6 and 36, large chains that sell products made with prison labor.
The largest contributors to Prop 36, Walmart, Target, Home Depot, are also the beneficiaries of Prop 6 because they profit from contracting prison labor. So it feels very much like a conflict of interest.
The chains that support Prop 36 have not come out against Prop 6, which has no organized opposition. I'm Suzanne Potter.
Trump's former chief of staff warns that the former president is a fascist. And a review of Georgia's voter rolls finds only 20 non-citizens out of about 8 million registered voters. With more in the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2024 Talks.
It is clear from John Kelly's words that Donald Trump is someone who, I quote, certainly falls into the general definition of fascist.
Vice President Kamala Harris is citing damning criticism of Donald Trump by his longest-serving chief of staff. Former Marine General John Kelly told the New York Times his old boss praised Adolf Hitler when in the White House and said while he agreed with many Trump policies, the former president would govern like a dictator if reelected. Meanwhile, Trump is campaigning in Georgia, where polling shows he has a slim advantage over Harris. He's telling supporters to vote early and repeating his commitment to crack down on immigrants.
We made the border really good, and now we're going to have to do it again. The difference is this border is 10 times, 15 times worse than it was in 2016.
According to Pew, border crossings have fallen dramatically since the Biden administration got Mexico to impose harsh policies there. The Border Patrol reports that August encounters at the southern border were down more than three quarters compared to last December. After a review of the 8 million names on Georgia's voter rolls, Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger says they found only 20 registered non-citizens.
Georgia is a model when it comes to preventing non-citizen voting.
Raffensperger says 9 of the 20 ever cast a ballot. The names were removed from the voter rolls and have been turned over to law enforcement. Democrats say Trump would use fear of migrants to impose authoritarian control using the right-wing roadmap Project 2025. Trump denies knowing what's in the plan, but New York Attorney General Letitia James says it shows he's a threat to the rule of law.
Donald Trump has no real agenda, just concepts. And there are other individuals who have agendas who will represent the whole of government and will, again, deny all of us our basic rights.
The nonprofit Forward Montana reports a palpable shift among Montana's young voters since Harris replaced Joe Biden as the Democratic nominee. The group's Sophie Scawthorne says specific issues are driving much more registration and voter engagement in spite of the state's deep red politics.
Based on our own research, we know that housing affordability and access to housing, inflation, LGBTQ plus issues, and reproductive rights are on the top of the mind for young people.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
There are calls in the Northwest to turn down divisive rhetoric As Election Day approaches with a highly competitive presidential race at the top of the ballots, Eric Tegedoff takes a look.
Election Day is less than 2 weeks away, and both sides are blaming the other for divisive political rhetoric. Others are asking to turn down the temperature. Adrienne Evans is head of United Vision for Idaho. She says there's been a troubling trend in rhetoric that targets certain groups of people, and that, unfortunately, can increase the likelihood of political violence. Evans says if you disagree with this type of language, there are ways to stop it and keep it from spreading.
Don't repeat it. Don't repost it. Challenge it. Think about if someone who's being targeted, who resembles this group or this identity, were to see this, how would they feel? And do you want to be the perpetrator of that?
Polls show Americans have grown tired of the intensifying language surrounding the election, even dating back to last year. A Pew Research Center poll from 2023 found 90% of respondents often or sometimes feel exhausted when thinking about politics. Divisive was the word most respondents used when considering the current state of U.S. politics. Evans says there's been a constant drumbeat of divisive rhetoric over recent years in politics.
The things that seemed so crazy, if they continue in a daily trickle, they become normalized. And the crazy things that we never, ever thought would have been possible become the new norm.
However, Evans also says that voting can provide an antidote to the current political climate and that the nation can get back on track.
Things feel a lot better when we can actually do democracy. And by that, I very specifically mean what it was intended for and what its promise is, that people from divergent views, perspective, experience, place can come together to find common solutions.
Election Day is November 5th. I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Dental therapists bridge the health gap in rural Native communities. The FBI says Operation Not Forgotten has helped more than 400 victims find justice. And inside MSU's tuition-free program for out-of-state Native students. With these stories and more, here's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
Many states are turning to dental therapists to serve tribes, but some are not sure adding another mid-level position is the way to tackle dental care deserts. The Mountain West News Bureau's Hannah Mersbach reports.
Dental therapists are a relatively new position. They can do things like cleanings, fluoride treatments, and even simple fillings, says dentist and researcher Donald Chi.
Put out small fires in a community with lots of dental care needs, and so then the dentist can come in and put out the big fires.
He says dental therapists are often focused on tribes, since about half of Indigenous people live in areas without enough dentists. Initiatives have been particularly successful in Alaska, but there are few training programs in the lower 48. And Tana Nagy with the Wyoming Dental Association says she'd rather see resources go toward existing programs for dentists, hygienists, and assistants.
Instead of trying to find faculty for new programs, which is just hard to find already.
She says states could also encourage reaching underserved populations by reducing dental workers' student loan debt. For National Native News, I'm Hannah Mersbach.
Michigan State University has launched a new program to expand educational opportunities for Native American students across the country. Crystal Blair has more details.
The Native American Tuition Advantage Program, or NATAP, gives out-of-state Indigenous students access to in-state tuition, helping to remove the financial barriers that have made it harder for many people to pursue higher education. According to Kevin Leonard, head of MSU's Native American Institute, the idea for this program came after years of conversation between the Native American community, MSU staff, and students.
A lot of our people were relocated all over the country, all over the North American continent. We really felt for those First Nation relatives, we should have something like a tuition reciprocity where at least they could attend MSU at in-state tuition at the bare minimum.
Leonard says getting students enrolled is only the first step. He says his department will expand programs, cultural activities, and resources to give students the support they need to succeed and graduate. Orville Cayadito is a Michigan State grad student from Utah and a member of the Navajo Nation. He started at MSU before the NATAP program was introduced. Fortunately, he received support through another MSU program. But he believes NATAP could be a game changer for many Native American students.
The situation a lot of Native students are faced with in that when choosing an out-of-state college, financial costs, out-of-state costs those are real questions that can make or break a decision for a student wanting to come out of state.
NATEP expands on Michigan State's Maynard Kennedy Turtle Island Acknowledgement Scholarship, which offers similar benefits to a limited number of students from state or federally recognized tribes. NATEP kicks off in fall of 2025. Crystal Blair reporting.
The Federal Bureau of Investigation says it has dedicated resources to address violent crime in Indian Country through its Operation Not Forgotten. The operation, in its second year, is jointly between the FBI and the Bureau of Indian Affairs Office of Justice Services. Officials say from June to September, resources helped to address unsolved cases. The assistance included FBI special agents and intelligence personnel who were deployed to 10 FBI field offices across the country. Officials say more than 300 cases received increased investigations and victim assistance, including cases involving sex abuse, violent assault, domestic violence, and death investigations. The effort, officials say, have led to more than 40 arrests, and more than 400 victims have been provided with support services. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, October 24th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Chris Gow, Althea Billings, Eric Tegadoff, and Suzanne Potter. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I am Annette Newell. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned.